Hello from Indiana, from the Carlson tribe out here. Today, what I want to speak on, the title that I've given it is called The Dying of the Light. The Dying of the Light is what I would like to call this. What I want to start with is in Matthew 22, verse 19. So if you'll flip over there, Matthew 22, verse 19. And I'll have a couple of scriptures today, a little heavier on reading than maybe I usually am. Give me a little leeway there as I try to craft this story for you. So Matthew 22, verse 19, when you go there, this is the phrase we've heard many times, or render under Caesar that which is Caesar's. But starting verse 19, this is where they're testing Jesus. And he says, show me the tax money, when they're asking him, questioning him about the authorities in their area. So they brought him a denarius, and he said to them, whose image and inscription is this? And they answered to him, Caesar's. And he said to them, render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. So what I want to do is open that up, a very common phrase that's used even in secular terminology, render under Caesar that which is Caesar's. And look into that in the times that we find ourselves right now. And the kind of backstory to this split sermon is the concept of isolation. What happens when people are isolated? We've been living in a time of quarantine or isolation, so to speak. And to bring people's attention to that, the understanding of isolation, not just in this time or framework, but in your life as a whole, and that we are social beings and the importance of that social being. So with that, I would ask you to go to Genesis 1, verse 27. So Genesis 1, verse 27. And there you will find that God so created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So not in the image of Caesar, per se, but we are created in the image of God, that if you were to be able to lay eyes on God, but we look like it. We were made in his likeness. So what I wanted to kind of pose to you, your duty as a person and as a Christian, as a member of this church, is created in the image of God, not into Caesar's. But starting with that framework, it is very hard to make an argument that you should render unto Caesar that which is in the image of God. So keep that in the back of your mind as we walk through this. Another Caesar in the Bible, metaphorically for government or leadership in a society, a fallen society, was Nebuchadnezzar. Correct? So Nebuchadnezzar was a Caesar of his time. No different than if you took a Plaganza or a Carlson or a LeBlanc in this time, our mirrors in that time, let's just play that out, would be someone that would be named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were men who try and follow God, go about their lives and their jobs. If you go to Daniel 3, chapter 3, verse 3, this is where the image of Nebuchadnezzar, he sets up the image as making people bow to it, making people worship it, even though it was wrong. So cutting in verse 3 of chapter 3 of Daniel. And so the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald cried aloud, to you it is commanded, O peoples, nations and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, and the psaltery, in with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. So we all know that story. I won't belabor it, but they were set up with a rule of what they needed to do. So there was a command there, the command of what you actually had to do. Well, we all know how that story goes, but the ask was very simple, right? If you think about it, in our times, the ask was very simple, correct? All you had to do was bow down or lay flat, or as we call it today in modern sports, kneel, right? You just had to, that was the mere ask of you. Not a tithe. You didn't have to take tithe. So there was not a financial implication. It wasn't a sacrifice. It wasn't a true sacrifice that you had to make. And there wasn't a marking that might define you as something other than the regular people, right? A simple ask, you could probably have just gone to your knees. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego could go to their knees, actually pray to their real God, and no one would really know the difference if you think about it. Put yourself in those shoes. They could have, as often we do in this life, we could have just played along, correct? You could have just Bow down, set a silent prayer. In your mind, rationalize you were just doing it to go along, not cause an issue. And who would know the difference if they had done that, other than God? Who would have known the difference? I warn you, in this society, we are starting to broach the time when those asks are coming, and they're coming quickly in this world. Your ability to worship, your ability to play, your ability to work will be challenged. And it won't be challenged overtly at first. Those of us who've been along longer than 20 years have seen that slow march. It's a slow one, right? It's not a demand of what you have to do. It usually starts out with an insinuation through media. Then it starts, hey, could you not do that, right? That's where this usually goes. But those demands are coming, much as they did for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. If you go over to Matthew chapter 5, verse 11, Matthew chapter 5, verse 11, go to Matthew 5, verse 11. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you, and they say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled under the feet of men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on the hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Think about that right now. Darkness, obviously God uses the metaphors in the Bible that he feels is right and that we will connect with right as his message goes out. Darkness is not a thing. I've mentioned this before. Darkness is not a thing. Darkness is a lack of something. It's a lack of something. When you say a dark-hearted person, it lacks light. It lacks joy. It lacks verve and energy. So I'd ask you, are you right now in this world bringing a light to the table? Or are you absent? Are you absent? Which absence actually requires very little effort, correct? You just don't have to be anywhere. You just kind of disappear. You don't have to shine a light. Is your lamp under a bushel basket right now in this world? You are seeing a darkness descend across the world, not just in the U.S., across the world. We feel it more in the U.S., but you know you feel it. You can't always put your hand up, but there's a darkness descending, right, that we all know. Look at the context that's taking place in our society. It's the unask. Think about it. Right now, we are in the phase of the unask, which then leads to the ask, which then leads to the tell. It's the way it always worked in humankind. You don't have to do these things right now, right? You're not demanded to go to church on a Sunday or to bow down. You just can't do some things, correct? You just can't do those. And they're small. And if you think about it, those small asks, they should actually be irreverent to you. What you'll get told is selfishness, or are you really going to fight on this hill? Or in our terminology, are you going to die on this hill? Think about that. Right now, what they've asked is the unask. So you don't have to do anything per se. But if you just wouldn't get with your church, if you wouldn't gather with your family in the large groups, if you wouldn't travel and keep connections, that's all they're asking to do. And they're actually doing it for your safety. But if I look back, think about this in the history of mankind, I'll bring up some examples. It starts with the unask, it moves to the ask, and then it moves to the tell. The ask is just to stay home. Why would you get your feathers ruffled about that, right? Especially in the U.S., we live in a beautiful place, right? We have our freedom, we have our homes, our own little place to go, correct? Most of us. That is the first ask towards isolation. And again, what they have shown in studies and science is, you know, that the one thing that humans tend to fear more than death is isolation. Isolation is an amazingly powerful tool. Think about it. Send your child into their room by themselves, right? Shun somebody, move away from them, not engage with them. Humans fear isolation. The power that can be gained by the use of isolation is played out again and again in this world. Be aware of that. Be very conscious of that and understand when that is taking place. Really, what this next one will be probably is it'll be a why marriage, right? It's not that you have to marry someone you don't know or there's arranged marriages, but why marriage? Why holy convocations? Why fellowship? Where this will lead is you don't have to do X, but you just don't do Y. We're firmly in the middle of that stage right now as a society. And it happens to myself, it happens to everybody. You slowly just kind of morph yourself, right? We're not looking harmless as a dove, is what we're brought up with, right? It's like, is it worth raising a ruckus here? Is it, What I'm saying is be very afraid of the movement towards isolation, because it happens very, very subtly, but it happens nevertheless. And the results of isolation, not just to you, but to those who you are isolated from, are highly detrimental to not only you as a human, but God's word. Think about it, if you would. Go to Ecclesiastes 4, verse 9. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 9. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 9. And what you will find there is the value of a friend. Is that in a lot of our Bibles, that in New King James Version, you'll see it. This is the value of a friend. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. And threefold cord is not quickly broken. Think about that. That is a command in the Bible from Ecclesiastes to not be a loner, right? Now, there's different personality types that we all have, but God expressly knows that there's a weakness in humans when left alone. And when you read in the Bible where it says, how can you get up when one falls? There's the immediate imagery in our mind of falling and slipping and someone putting out their hand and helping you to your feet. But it also has the inclination towards if you fall in terms of, from a religious standpoint, sin. If no one's around to lift you, to help you, that iron sharpens iron, that you have that push from people and the banter, how do you get up? How do you get up if you are isolated away from that? I'd ask you to go to Hebrews 10 also. Hebrews 10, verse 23. Hebrews 10, verse 23. Hebrews 10, verse 23 says, let us hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering. For he who promised is faithful, and let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Let that settle in on you. I'd actually suggest when time comes, go back and read Hebrews 10, 23 through 25, but not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Settle in, read that, see where your mind actually takes you when you put a new set of eyes on that. I don't think any of us can argue that the day is approaching, that time and place we do not know. But the change that has taken place in just 7 or 8 months in this country, as an example, the isolation that has taken place at the demand of the leadership in this country. Think about that and do not let yourself not be aware of it. We can't fight everything. I'm not asking for a revolution in the hills, but I think sometimes it's incremental. The ask becomes so small that it's easy to go along just to live another day, as they say, right? Just to get through a Wednesday, to get to a Thursday, to get yourself through what you have. Think about what's happening. Just flip over to Hebrews 13, verse 1. Hebrews 13, verse 1. It says, let brotherly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them, those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in the body also. Let brotherly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers. New Testament. So if you take today's focus on the New Testament in what we'd call Christianity, think about that. That's a New Testament that says, you should entertain strangers. And everything we're being told right now is to stay away from people you don't know. Create an isolation, create a fear, create a distance. Very odd that that would be in the Bible, and you compare that to the place we find ourselves in this society right now. Pull not back from the world in these moments. I assure you, if you look at it historically, is you trade safety, right? Or are you trading for safety, your freedom, so to speak, and you end up with neither. Be careful. Make sure that we step back and read the Bible, right? Not just the excerpts here, but the commands that God gave that aren't like 10 commandments, so to speak, but the ones that are woven into the fabric of different parts of the Bible. Remember that. We tend to remember, hey, you know, you run across somebody, it could be an angel, right? That's those of us been in the church get that. But remember what it says there. Keep, reach out, entertain. You take that action forward. You don't sleep back. Stay in your apartment, stay in your home, and remove yourself from the world. Remember, fear is the Play-Doh of the devil's hands. It always has been, it always will be. Fear is to live with an action that may never happen, but the consequences you've already digested. Think about that. Fear is truly the playground of the devil's hand. Always remember, truly evil people don't just hurt others. So we've dumbed down the meaning of evil in this world, right, due to political reasons and such. But evil people don't just hurt others. They take a pride in the pain and then blame the victim. Emotion will always be where you see this happen. You'll always see it around emotion. There's a quote by Hitler. It says, "I use emotion for the many and reason for the few." Wherever you see emotion, heavy doses of emotion in what I'm called leadership or wherever it may be in the country, in your life, in your business, whatever, be very aware of that. Because evil people, they don't just cause problems. They enjoy it. And then at the end of the day, what they'll usually do is blame those that are hurt for the problem themselves. Think back on it. You'll see isolation will cause that opening for depression and fear that you're slowly seeing invade us. If you go to 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 16, 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 16, 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 16, there you will read, "Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Do not quench the spirit. Do not despise prophecies. Test all things. Hold fast what is good. Abstain from every form of evil." Do not quench the spirit. I draw your eyes there. And test all things. Hold fast that which is good. Now, it's your job to filter through and find out what is good and what is evil in this life, right? There's no exact playbook outside of the Bible, right, at every instance. But test all things. What they're saying is question, weigh, put in the balances. Find out what is good. You know, if you were made in God's image, and we know the spirit that God gave us, and he told us not to go meekly before his throne, but boldly, I'm pretty sure he's imbued you with the ability to test things and use your understanding in your mind for what is good and what is evil and how to act accordingly. Remember, we are to be one body in Christ, one body in Christ. If you think about it, I won't make good there. One body works all of its parts together, right? You don't have an arm over here and a leg over there. You put those parts together to create the body of Christ. It takes the hand, right? It tells you each of us have different skills, different abilities, but they only work when they are together. Make sure you remember that as people push you further and further apart from whoever it may be, is there's a reason that's being done with people. Don't let that. Remember, lepers are forced out of camps, right? Slaves are forced to do things. Even God doesn't force you to do anything. If you think about that, God doesn't force you to do anything. He puts the rule book in front of you, the consequences that will come from it. But we think of all these powerful people or powerful institutions in the world. God does not force you to do anything other than to be accountable for the decisions you make of your own free will. You'll say, yes, but God did remove himself. He isolated himself, or Jesus Christ did. And that's there. We don't have to move there. But Matthew 14, 23, Luke 5, 16, Mark 1, 35. Whenever Jesus was in a moment that he needed to think or draw closer to God, he withdrew for prayer. He took an action as an individual and withdrew himself for a purpose. He wasn't told to move away from the group and go pray in the mountaintops. He made that action himself. Remember that. God forces nobody to do anything. Always keep that in the back of your mind. Isolation causes fear and anxiety. It is truly more fearful in humans than death itself is isolation. The concept of being isolated from all others, from the heart, from the feel, from the logic, from the emotion of other humans. In a secular sense, with God removed, what is usually the perceived individual or institution that can alleviate fear and anxiety? Think about it. Take God out of the equation. The solution becomes Caesar, becomes the government, right? So if I make you feel fearful and isolated and anxious, there's no longer a God, so to speak, from a society standpoint. What do you have? You have the government to come to alleviate that from you, or some quote unquote higher power derived from humans, not from God. Tyrants know how to ride a tiger of human fear and isolation. They always do. Think about the times we live in now for a scary standpoint. our digital world has made it easier. I don't need your body to isolate you. I had to bring people or officers to isolate someone. I had to take you. I literally had to take your body. I don't need your body to isolate you anymore. Just your password and the removal of your post from the internet, or mockery. Actually, what you're seeing right now is a play out of mockery. So to isolate you, the fear of firing, the fear from your job, mockery, shunning, that's actually where isolation occurs now. The slippery slope that we've allowed ourselves to get on from a social standpoint or an interaction is that I don't actually have to come get you. I can isolate you in your own house. I can isolate you in your own car, because I prey upon your fear of isolation and anxiety by being mocked. Humans hate to be mocked. Any of us, right? You hate to be mocked. But if you look at it in the Bible, you're actually supposed to rejoice in that. Think of it. Look back at all tyrants. Hitler, Mao, Koresh, David Koresh, all used isolation. Every single one of them. Go look at it. Go pull someone apart, have them dress a little different, make them be in front of a crowd, pull them away into a camp. All of them. They use isolation. Hostility to the assembling of non-approved people is the playbook of evilness. So the hostility towards the assembling of people is the playbook. If there was a playbook for bad people, that would almost be chapter one. Every keystroke that you make online is known. Think about that. Every keystroke, people don't realize this. Every IP number that's any iPad, computer, whatever, every keystroke you've ever taken in your life is known. Somewhere in a data bank, connected to an IP in the world. If you move that activity online, what happens? I know who you congregate with, right? I know what was said. They literally know down to the keystrokes what that is. Be aware of that as this world plays out. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. It's not that. But be aware of the world. I think sometimes in our wealthy society, we let down our guard to that. Remember, you're known when you're forced online. Every step you take, every movement you take is known. Who you associate with. Hence why, for where we are right now with the COVID thing, contact tracing. They can contact you with cell phone, know who you're around. Just think about those things. In this country alone, look at the First Amendment. So in this country, think about the First Amendment. There's no way to believe that there wasn't a inspiration of those men by God to create the country that we have in the U.S., right? Were they all perfect men? No. Were they necessarily, they were God-fearing men? Yes, many of them. Maybe not in the way we see it. But think about the First Amendment. So in our country right now, people get riled up. What do you always hear about? The Second Amendment, right? You'll hear about Second Amendment, right to bear arms, blah, blah, blah. Usually things are prioritized. When lists are made, they're prioritized from most important downward. Think about the First Amendment of this country. Now, since I'm not looking at you, I don't have to see the faces of those people right now wondering what the First Amendment actually is, though we all know it. Congress shall make no law prohibiting the free exercise thereof of the right of the people to peaceably assemble. Think about that. The founders of this country, before self-defense, actually ranked it before self-defense, which is considered, you know, in legal terms, the most natural of natural law, is the right of assembly. They knew that humans needed that. They needed the right to congregate with whoever they saw or felt was proper for their family, their religion, whatever. That wasn't done on accident. Think about it. The first step to breaking identification with a group, a tradition, we forget this. I just fade real fast. Think about it. The first thing you do is just break people from meeting. Break the tradition just a little bit. Think in your own life how many traditions you had that now just kind of slipped away, right? The kids moved on. They got older. They went away. Think how quickly those faded. There wasn't an intent of you to break a tradition that was a good one. But life just kind of played out, right? The tradition fades. Your connection to it faded. Whatever that may be. Take that same concept and apply it at a larger level. The rules don't change at all. If you look at where we are headed, I ask you to keep your eyes open for what the reality is around you. We can't change everything, but I will tell you, keep your eyes open. There's always a quote that caught my attention, and this took place in 2008. So in 2008, I heard this quote, and it caught my attention at that time. And the quote was, "We're going to have to change the traditions, our history. We're going to have to move to a different place as a nation." Let me read the first part of that again. We're going to have to change our traditions, our history. So tautologically, just a stupid statement. How do you change one's history, correct? You can't change history. But if you step back and think about that, that was a former president's wife. They really thought the way to change people's behavior was to change their history, right? Change their traditions. no different than in the church, right? If you all of a sudden just stopped keeping atonement, but kind of on your own day, because we understand people have to go to work, you slowly change the tradition and you change the history of the people. What they're actually alluding to is no longer connecting you back to the history that is yours. It didn't change. You can't change what it is. It's tethering that umbilical cord that to some extent creates your knowledge of the Lord, of knowing who you are and what you do know and what is proper. The hijacking or creation of this moment is not accidental. Don't think any of this is accidental. Just a little less identification with your church, just a little less identification with your country, a little less identification with your county fair, let's say, your county fair that you went to every year, or maybe just a little distant from your family or your school. That's how people become isolated. That's how traditions get broken. Be aware of that. Be very aware of that and be acutely aware of that. Inability to fact check reality by getting together with people. Think about how reality was framed previously. You got together with people, right? Joe told a story and Andrew told a story of what they heard. You melded a reality face to face. Now you have to trust the digital plumbing, so to speak. You're allowed to see that which is allowed to be given to you. You can't overcome that if you're not allowed to be with people, to rub against people, so to speak, to pollinate with people. Editing, the concept of editing, is the single largest tool in the toolbox of today's evil, if you think about it. The director or the producer of your life should only be one person, and that should be you. You shouldn't let your life be edited by anyone. You know what God's law is. You know what God's rules are. You know what the outcome of this is. There shouldn't be a subcredit at the end of your movie that says somebody else was the director, editor, producer of your life. Make sure you take ownership of that in this world that we are. You now sit, to some extent, in this country, you now sit waiting for them to grant you a right to assemble with others, to go out, to do things that was never theirs to take in the first place. Think about that. You're now waiting for them to give you a right that was never theirs in the first place. You should fear not living more than dying. Fear not living more than dying. God is a God of action, right? He tells you, go forth, do whatever it may be, multiply, work, the parable of the talents, it's all there. We're not one of not doing. God didn't put that spirit into us. Think of that, the parable of talents. Are you right now, from spreading the word and understanding with people, planting seeds with people, are you making the deposit even in the bank, so to speak? Are you investing in the business of growing the word? Or do you have a shovel in your hand, waiting to bury the talents that you do have, for you do not know when Jesus will come back to reap them? Think about that. Where are you at? Do you have a shovel in your hand, or do you have a wrench and a hammer and you're building something with your hands? Think about that. I would ask, build your immunity to social pressure more than you build your immunity to the coronavirus. If you can build your immunity to social pressure, then you've got something. Then you have the ability to overcome the body and the mind. In today's day and age, one of the biggest challenges, overcome community pressure. Don't let it affect you. Don't care about it. Move past it. Isolation drives us to long for contact. Generally ask yourself in the last 10 days, have you thought more about what other people think of you or what God thinks of you? Only you can answer that, whether online or talk to somebody. Think about it. The minutes that you've put in the last 10 days, have you thought about what others think about you more than you've thought about what God thinks about you? If you look at those scales, you might be concerned, right? You might want to look at that and understand where the weighting is in your life. But that social pressure, be very careful about that. Grow immune to it. As is mentioned before, we have an issue in the church at times with the extent of the age. We joke about it, that the age of the church and some of the individuals in the church, all of us, family, right? Age changes the glasses you wear, so to speak, to how you view things, the parameters that we see. Like the Israelites wandering, you know, in the Old Testament, who could not enter, right? There was a time that those Israelites knew that they could not enter the kingdom after what had transpired. At that time, they realized they had to be a link in a chain, so to speak, for their progeny to make it into the promised land. Think about that. Are you pushing forward? Maybe you may never see the fruits of it, right? You may pass away. You may die. Things may change. But have you really thought about that? Are you a link in a chain in a weird time to show how a life should be lived with vigor? I ask you, my kids are watching you. They may not see you all the time, maybe only at the feast, but my children are watching your actions, what you do, how you act, how you respond to the macro conditions in the world right now. Do you follow God's law? Do you shrink in a corner? They know, right? Other people's children, they see it. You can't hide. Children, as I always say, more is caught than taught. They pick up a whole lot more than you could ever imagine. Where are you? Do not hope that if you behave, you may get to go out for a walk and a treat like a little dog at a house. Don't think that will happen. Be aware of the surroundings you have in this world right now. Set a precedent for yourself. Set a precedent for the children that are behind you. They're watching you. You may not have asked for the job, but they are watching you. People in this church, people in other churches, the children of the individuals, they're watching you. Remember your behaviors, your ability to fight, your ability to kind of push forward. It's being watched every day. Where are you at in that battle? What example are you setting for others? You're planting seeds right now in other people's fields, the fields of their mind. You're planting seeds in their mind that you may not see that fruit until the kingdom comes. But they'll have known and remembered, you were that guy. You were that gal, right? You're planting seeds. You may never see the fruit, but make no mistake, you're planting those seeds. Touch others. Beat back that darkness that's being imposed upon you and descending upon you right now. Distrust those who sow division and malaise. Distrust it. Have nothing to do with it. Distance yourself from it. Think about Caleb. So Caleb was one of the 12 that went out to see the promised land to see if they could take it in Canaan, what God had promised them. Think about when they came back. You can go read about it later if you want to. But they gave the report, right, in front of all of the congregation. So how many millions of people? So the report was given in front of millions of people. And Caleb, if you understand the story, remember the story, was the one individual that said, we can go up and get them. We can go up and get them. So if you do the math, if this was a tweet on Twitter or a post on Facebook, think about this. 8.3% of the people liked Caleb's tweet. And that was just Caleb himself. 91.7% of the people thought it was wrong, stupid, and crazy. They actually just wanted to go back to where they came from as slaves. Remember that Caleb stepped up in front of people. 8.3% of the votes were on his favor, and that was just his own vote, nobody else's. Think about that. He stood in front of all of Israel and delivered that. Would you have the willingness to do that with God's word right now, which you know is right? Or would you just slowly slink back into the crowd, allow the isolation to take place, and realize you really didn't need that milk and honey or to follow through maybe with what you knew was God's commands, but the pressure was a little too strong. So with that, I will finish with a poem. I'm not a big guy on poetry, but I'll finish with this poem that I always thought was a really good one. So with this, I will finish. But this is a poem by Dylan Thomas, and it's called Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night. You can go look it up online. It's a well-known poem, but listen to me on this one. Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at the close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning they, do not go gentle into that good night. Good men the last wave by, crying how bright their frail deeds might have danced in Green Bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang in the sun in flight and learned too late they grieved it's on its way. Do not go gentle into that good night. Grave men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay, rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.